the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show. And we welcome you along with us here. Tonight we'll talk a little bit more about our one-man show that we are planning for the spring and other fun things. We also have the debate between President Obama and Governor Mitt Romney, the presidential debate, which is occurring, actually did occur and is occurring yet again on certain networks across the country and I'm sure the world. Margaret Gray is joining us tonight along with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman. Bobby Dooley is on the phone and will discuss with us the debate that's happening at this present time. Our number is 877-876-7445, and we're online at philhendryshow.com, our website, and our Phil TV in HD site. That's where you can go with a backstage pass. You can watch our broadcasts as well as listen to them, and you can also access thousands of hours of archived audio, full radio shows, the Phil Hendry Show going back over a decade, and we have close to 5,000 hours of radio there. If you become a backstage pass member, you also are entitled to all kinds of cool stuff that only Backstage Pass members get, which includes, for instance, all the information regarding our efforts beyond radio. We talk about on our pre-show feed. We have an uncensored pre-show as well as uncensored breaks between the live radio show taking place. So it's a behind-the-scenes look. And let me tell you something. You know,
Sometimes it's very traumatic to watch, though, Phil. You know that.
Yes, and I was going to say that.
Yeah, a lot of times people get scared of it.
I think that's a very good word. A lot of times people are just flat afraid of you.
Well, what do you mean? Who? People who are watching?
Yeah, well, people are watching, but more importantly, people here.
The people in the studio, yeah.
Well, what's that got to do with Phil TV?
Well,
I mean, we're talking about people watching it. People, are they afraid of me?
I don't know. I'm just saying that the Phil TV sometimes makes me frightened of you.
You're sitting right here, though. You're not watching it on TV.
That's true.
So you're going to be scared whether I'm on TV or not.
No, I don't. I it's hard to explain, but because you're on TV, it makes me more...
It makes you scarier.
I'm not even on TV. I'm on a webcast over the internet.
Well, that makes it less scary.
Yeah, that helps.
Well, you know, I don't even know what you're talking about. Boy, we're not even 5 minutes into the show and I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, Phil, that's not unusual. I mean, you have a very difficult time following what I'm saying.
What are you saying? What am I not following? When you say...
When I say that for anybody out there who is watching the show right... For anyone out there that does not have a backstage pass...
Okay.
And they want to get a backstage pass, I am simply saying that seeing you on Phil TV... Or not seeing you on Phil TV, but people that look at you could be frightened.
Yeah.
Even if you're not seeing me on Phil TV.
That is correct.
But if you do see me on Phil TV, you're still scared.
Yeah, it's possible.
It's possible, yes.
You understand what I'm saying? In other words, we're looking at you.
Are you afraid of me right now?
No.
Margaret?
No, I'm not afraid of you.
Well, then, all right, so...
Well, it looks like you're going to start to cry.
I feel like crying because I don't know what anybody's talking about here, man. All I know is that I'm being criticized.
Oh, would you stop? No one's crying. I'm just saying for people that want to get a backstage pass, be forewarned that those of us who sit in the studio with you can be very scared of you.
What do they give a damn whether you are scared of me? What I'm asking here is, are they afraid of me?
I don't know, man. I don't think we can answer that question.
Then nobody cares, man. If you guys are afraid of me in studio, then you and I can talk about that, okay?
Well, I'm not afraid of you now.
But if you ever are afraid of me, you can talk to me.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to know.
Okay, now let's talk about the backstage pass, which is what people can get and they can watch Phil TV in HD. Are they afraid of me?
Oh, I don't know.
So it's got nothing to do with what I'm talking about, you guys being afraid of me.
Well, it only happened one time.
Yeah, I got afraid of you. When you were not doing what I asked you to do, I thought you were going to take control of a certain... I forget what it was we were talking about.
Well, I don't really, Margaret. You know, I'm...
Well, I mean, very important stuff.
Yeah, sure, it's important. Look, you guys, you can talk to me anytime you want about anything you want, and I'd be very happy to respond to what your concerns are, right? I'm talking about people with a backstage pass who watch the show on Phil TV... it's got nothing to do with what you're saying. You say that they're, well, I don't know whether they're going to be afraid. I thought you said that it would be scary. I don't know. All right, let me go over to the phones here. I got Mark, Bobby Dooley is on the phone. Bobby, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, Phil. How are you?
Good. Do you know what they're talking about?
No, I don't. I have no idea.
Well, I don't know that she's a good one to ask.
I'm sorry?
I said I was speaking to Phil.
Well, I know, but I'm here.
Well, okay, so what did you say?
I didn't say anything.
Bobby, what did you say?
I didn't say anything either.
Well, who got upset?
She said, I don't know if she's a good one to ask.
Yes.
All right. Bobby, my question, Margaret.
Well, I am going to be allowed to talk, aren't I?
You can talk, but I don't want a lot of, because I know that this, sometimes it's contentious, and I would like, if you guys want to debate something, that's fine. All right, Bobby, let's forget about all that behind the scenes here. I've got you on the phone here specifically to talk to me about Romney and Obama tonight. Give me your take, and yes, Margaret, we'll go to you and whoever else. Give me your take.
Well, Steve and I watched the debate, and we were put off right off the bat by PBS's cover. It's not PBS, but it was the host from PBS.
His name is Jim Lehrer.
Yes, Jim Lehrer. What upset me about it was that in watching the debate, you would see in the coverage President Obama looking to his left. You would see Mitt Romney looking to his right. And yet, when they showed the two of the men together on stage, they were both looking toward the center of the stage at Mr. Lehrer. Now, I don't know if anyone else has noticed this, but either it's an optical illusion or it is something being done by public television to somehow manipulate how we're viewing this.
I don't know what I'm looking at the... I don't have the TV in front of me. If any of you guys do, at home or Margaret?
No, I don't know what she's talking about.
All right, so say this again.
Well, I didn't think that you're not a very good one to ask about that either, Margaret.
What is that?
What I'm talking about.
Well, I concur there.
Okay, fine, hold on. When you look at the TV screen...
When you look at the TV screen of Obama and Romney, when the two of them are looking at Jim Lehrer, they are looking in opposite directions.
It's a split screen, isn't it?
It is a split screen. However, they are, in fact, on the same side of each other that the split screen shows. President Obama is, in fact, standing on the right side of, in the audience's view, on the right side, or if you will, he's at stage left. He's at stage left.
All right, let me jump in, because I've got an entertainment background. And she's starting to use entertainment terms.
Well, I think I got it right.
No, let me jump in, Phil.
Go ahead.
All right. When you use an entertainment term like stage left, you are forgetting that I am a trained singer and I've been on stage, and I think not to acknowledge me in that context is a little rude.
Well, I didn't think I had to acknowledge you just because I said stage left. You know?
Well, I would think that it would be one of the things that would come into your mind, Phil. Phil, do you agree with that?
I don't think it much matters.
I agree.
Well, I didn't ask you, Bud. What doesn't matter?
Phil is saying it doesn't matter if I say stage left.
Excuse me, I'm asking Phil. What do you mean?
It doesn't matter, Margaret. You're in... Yes, I know you've been in entertainment. Because Ms. Dooley used an entertainment term like stage left... What do you think should happen?
I think she needs to acknowledge that my presence.
Miss Gray, I am not attempting to cut you out of the conversation.
Well, I can hear you choosing your words very carefully, all right? So I know that there is something afoot.
But look at Margaret. There's nothing afoot here. She simply used a term that should be used because it's very difficult to anybody... Knowing when someone's talking about a stage, are you talking about the left or the right? Are you talking from the audience's perspective or are you talking from the actor's perspective? So when we say stage left, we mean if you're standing on the stage, it's to your left.
I know that. How dare you lecture me?
Margaret, no one is lecturing you.
No, Phil all of a sudden is talking to me as if I've never been on stage. And I'll have you know, Phil, and you know full well that I have.
I know that you have. I'm saying this so my audience understands, so that they're not cut out of the conversation. Now, we've gone a fair part of this segment without saying anything about the subject at hand, which is the actual debate. And I'd like you to just hold on to your thought, Margaret. Bobby, I want to return to you. I'd like to talk about the debate and not necessarily about the camera placement, the blocking of the staging. And that's a theatrical term, and I'm sorry, Margaret, I didn't mean to cut you out of the mix. I know you know what blocking means.
Yes, I do, and thank you at least for acknowledging that. That's all I was going to ask of Bobby.
All right, I'm very happy to do that, Miss Gray. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Gosh.
No, it's a big deal.
Jeez.
Oh, don't blow it. Don't start talking about me like I'm 14, all right? This is a very legitimate grievance, Phil.
All right, hold on. When we use a theatrical term, we will acknowledge that you know about.
That's all I'm asking. I put a lot of years in the theater.
Fine. Bobby, please continue.
Please continue.
All right. And I know you have to break. I just heard you say break.
Yeah, we will in a minute. But please, just get into it.
My only concern was that President Obama, who does appear to be standing stage left, and Margaret Gray is also a former actress, and I know you know what I'm talking about, Margaret, and Mitt Romney, who is stage right, and Margaret Gray is a former actress, and I know you know that I'm talking about, that you know what I'm talking about. It seems disquieting because when the two men talk to each other, they're looking back in each other's directions. They're looking towards stage center. And Margaret Gray, I know you know what I'm talking about on account of it's about theater.
All right, now I got a break. And hold on for just a moment.
What are you irritated about?
This is ridiculous. It's taking more time than we need to take up with this concept. We'll be right back. It's the Phil Henry Show. We'll continue with our discussion of the Obama-Romney debate, the presidential debate, here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
See, I didn't do anything.
The Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-7445, the Phil Henry Show here, as we talk with Bobby and Steve Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association. We also have Margaret Gray, Robert Leonard, and Bud Dickman in studio talking about tonight's presidential debate. And we are looking at a replay. I don't know if you're looking at the same one, Bobby. It shows the tracking of a select group of people, a focus group of people, men and women who represent apparently undecided voters in the state of Colorado, and it is showing how they're responding to the different candidates, the two different candidates. How are you reading this?
Well, how do you mean, how am I reading
it? I mean, what is your response to it? Looks, for instance, right now the president is talking, and he's getting a very favorable reading, or...
Oh, no, I know what you mean, Phil. I thought you were asking me, do I have a television set? And yes, I do.
No, he was asking you what you think of the chart.
Margaret, I've got it, okay?
All right.
Phil explained it to me, and I understood what he was saying, Margaret. Thank you.
Don't be snippy, please.
Margaret, I will talk. When it's time for you, you can talk.
Fine.
Now me?
Go ahead, yeah.
I did see favorable responses to President Obama from men. Now, these are undecided, and undecided voters still tend to be individuals that in the past, of course, have voted for either a Republican or a Democrat. They don't have the party allegiance that others do, and they're pivotal because, first of all, the party faithful, the Republican and the Democratic Party faithful, these are votes that you can count on, and they're fairly predictable. Those are the voters that nominated these two men. But when you get to the undecided voters, these are the voters that take their time. They tend to think an awful lot about what they want to do. They tend to analyze things a little bit more. they tend to be a little more free-thinking. They tend to be a little more independent. And they're not people that you are automatically going to be able to count on when it comes to primary time. They're not people that, I shouldn't say primary time.
You meant to say general election?
Yeah, general election, because those people don't tend to vote in the primaries. And if they do vote in the primaries, they'll stick with their party, because generally you do have to vote in order to vote for a Democrat, or to vote in a primary, I should say, you have to be the member of a political party.
Yes, Margaret, hold on.
I don't know what she's talking about.
Okay, then if you don't know what she's talking about, then why don't you ask her a question?
Yeah, there's no need to be rude.
No, I'm not being rude. Excuse me, but did you say to address you, Phil?
Yes, you did. I mean, I did.
All right, that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
I don't know what she's talking about.
Okay, then would you address a question to Bobby?
Is her name Bobby?
My name is Bobby. You know what it is.
No, I know that, Bobby, but Phil said address your question to Bobby.
That's fine. I'm sorry. I blew it.
All right. Bobby or Brobby, I don't care which. What do you mean in the primary all you can do is vote for your own party?
No, I'm sorry. I misspoke. You have to be a registered voter. You have to be a member of a political party to vote in that party's primary. So that would exclude being an independent voter, if you will, and voting for just anyone. It depends on the state.
Okay. Which of the two do you consider yourself to be?
In what way?
Do you consider yourself to be an undecided or a party faithful?
Well, I am an undecided.
All right, so you said you're an undecided.
Yeah.
Okay, that means you consider yourself to be very independent. You also consider yourself to be very free-thinking, all of those very complimentary terms, isn't that true?
Yes, but I didn't say that to self-aggrandize. I said that to simply give you an honest answer.
And yet you know that that makes you sound better than me, for instance.
I was not looking to sound better than you, Margaret. I was looking to simply give an honest answer to your question.
All right, let me cut through all of this, the lying.
I am not lying.
All right, there's no need to characterize it that way.
Well, I don't think she's being completely honest, you know.
There's no need to characterize it that way. Hold on, Bobby. There's no need to characterize what she's saying as a lie, all right? There is absolutely no need for that, and I don't want that. Why don't you go ahead and get to your point?
My point is simply this. I am a party faithful. I do vote the Democratic Party. And the reason why I vote the Democratic Party is because I am a free thinker. I have looked over all of the options, and I have decided that voting Democrat, no matter who the candidate...
Oh, my God. See, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, excuse me. Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
I decide to vote Democrat no matter who the candidate, because I feel that is the best choice to make. And I resent being lumped into a category where I am not a free thinker.
I was not really thinking of you, Margaret, or anyone in particular. When Phil asked me the question, I simply said that independent voters tend to be more free-thinking. That's all I was saying.
That's all I heard. That's really all I heard, you know.
Well, that's all you heard, but I don't think you were listening very clearly.
All right. Well, I mean, look. I don't think I've heard anything said here by Ms. Dooley that is intended to be an insult. She's talking about an independent voter being an individual that tends to take more time, and maybe that's why they do more reading. If you have more time, you have more time to fill, and you may actually fill that time with reading up on the candidates and so forth, whereas a Democratic or a Republican voter who is a party-faithful voter, such as yourself, Margaret, they have decided, based upon your criteria, that the party platform, that voting for the party candidate, that being faithful to the party, is the much smarter thing to do in the long run. Okay.
Well, Phil, you're putting it in a very nice way. What kind of voter are you?
I tend to be an independent.
Yeah, so you do tend to be a little more intelligent, Phil.
Yeah, see that? So you're more intelligent, and Bobby's more intelligent, and the two of you are going to go off and have coffee together, and who knows, maybe even have sex.
What a thing to say!
I'm sorry.
Where are you going?
I'm going to cool off.
No, I apologize.
No, you have nothing to apologize for. That's a hell of a thing to say, Margaret.
Oh, stick it.
We're going to be right back, folks. I apologize for that extremely emotional and completely irrelevant, and I might even add uncharacteristic, comment by Margaret Gradenite. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
I'm sorry if I did anything.
You didn't do anything wrong.
I didn't do anything, Mr. Henry.
I know that.
Discovering myself legally.
Phil Henry. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Bobby and Steve Dooley have joined us. We're also going to have Dean Wheeler from Northern California. Dean, decidedly a, very much a liberal voter and an advocate for liberal policies and a supporter of President Barack Obama's. We are also going to be joined by General Galen Shaw, I think, at some point. And, of course, Larry Grover will be with us, Larry with the Conservatives of Kern County. Now, Margaret, your point was just before we left the air, after we'd left the air, you made a point about President Obama.
Yes, Phil. First of all, President Obama, as was pointed out in some of the news coverage, and I'm grateful for this, President Obama did not get down in the filth and muck around in the filth by bringing up Bain Capital, by bringing up the hard line on immigration, by bringing up the 47% video that was taken by President Carter's nephew. So, and he could have brought those things up, and he could have allowed the debate to settle in comfortably, if you will, and I'm being facetious, but to settle in comfortably. As if you're sitting down comfortably in a very warm, wet, freshly dropped cow blank. That's what President Obama could have done. And I'd like to hear Ms. Dooley's comments on that.
Bobby?
Well, I think that the image of President Obama allowing the debate to settle comfortably into I think what she was talking about was a warm, wet cow dropping, I guess.
Yes.
I don't know if that's an image that I would necessarily go to, but I think what you're saying is that it was somehow the president being the bigger man. Is that it?
Absolutely, because you know that if President Obama had been guilty of some of the same things, the president would have been the object of a great many attacks by Governor Romney. So I think the man with more class in this debate was President Obama by not allowing this to almost swim in filth, to swim in waste, the way so many debates have been allowed to.
All right. Let me bring on, Bobby, did you want to follow up?
Well, I would just follow up. I have a very difficult time with the imagery that she's using, swimming in waste or settling into filth. I don't think it's so filthy to ask a question about a man's, record.
But I think it's all sludge and filth and waste material, and it is all just something that is better seen, I would suppose, on the shoelaces of a man standing at a urinal, not in a presidential debate.
Okay, did we lose Ms. Dooley?
Yeah, we did.
All right, well, I certainly didn't. Did she hang up?
No, she didn't. I think we lost the line to Bobby Dooley. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. Let me go back to, Margaret, what you were saying. First of all, you're a supporter of President Obama's. Now, the stuff, therefore, that you're referencing was stuff that was brought up in President Obama's during the campaign preceding these debates, and they were things that were brought up by the president's own campaign people in his own attack ads. So what you're saying is the president while not engaging in filth tonight.
No.
No, no. But what you're saying is the president, while not engaging in filth tonight, has engaged in filth in the past.
No, he has not engaged. No, I didn't say that. I said that tonight, in the midst of a presidential debate where people who are watching this debate don't ordinarily follow the politics of the moment, don't ordinarily follow political campaigns, people watching this tonight were not treated to a filth-strewn festival of sprayed waste and waste material onto them as if they were the shoelaces of a man standing at a urinal. That's what I'm trying to say.
All right, and you know what? By the way, you know, I sort of agree with Ms. Dooley in a way. The imagery, I've got a little bit of a difficult time with as well. All right.
Excuse me. No, you're not just going to blow me off and go to a phone call. What do you mean?
Exactly what I said. I don't like the imagery of the urinal and the waste and the swimming in filth and so on and so forth. Okay.
Well, as you yourself said, Phil, I'm referring to President Obama's own so-called attack ads.
Right. And it's, to your way of thinking, it's not filth when he does it during the campaign, and it's not filth tonight, but it would be filth if he brought it up tonight, because there would be people hearing it for the first time.
Yes, people that are here for the presidential debate. They're not here, Phil, to listen to a man spout out of his mouth something better expelled from some other orifice. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But I think it's very, very cozy and cagey of you to say that tonight it would be filth. And, oh, by the way, President Obama is not engaging in it tonight. During the campaign, it was not filth, and he was engaging in it.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Yes, it is. And I don't have a lot of time for you. I just expressed to you exactly what you said. 877-876-7445. I don't get a phone call here.
Well, Phil, you are. What you're doing is you're not allowing me to respond. You're going into some rapid fire expression.
No, Margaret, I can't right now explain it any better than I did. All right. General Galen Shaw is joining us from his home in San Diego this evening, and I want to get his take as a man, a former military man, a gentleman who has been in the United States military. And obviously someone who's voted conservatively over the course of his life. How do you think this debate's going, sir?
Phil, first of all, it's always a great pleasure to be on your program. Thank you for having me on your program. Ms. Gray, how are you this evening?
I'm very fine. Thank you, General.
And as I gathered, Ms. Dooley is no longer on the line.
She's not here.
Phil, the debate this evening that I'm looking at, featuring Governor Romney and President Obama, I think is a debate that has been very well articulated, but I have to agree with the pundits and my own eyes when I see that Governor Romney, I think, has acquitted himself very well. President Obama, I don't think, has acquitted himself very well, and it isn't because the president is not a good debater. It's just that Governor Romney has the facts and figures on his side. And I think tonight he's done a better job, Phil, of articulating the faults of the health care plan than he's been able to throughout the entire campaign.
And what are those faults, sir?
Who is this?
Margaret Gray. Do you have some more? I'd just like him to say what he wants to say.
All right, that's fine, but then I'd like to ask some questions.
No, I'd be very happy right now to answer any questions that the lady has.
What faults are there in the health care plan?
Margaret is asking me what faults there are in the health care plan.
That is correct.
Well, the health care plan is understood very well by Governor Romney, was my point, and he articulated very well what is wrong with the plan in ways that people could understand. And he did so, Margaret, for the very first time in this campaign.
No, I understand that, General, but now that he has articulated that, I'm here. I have to assume that people better understand it.
Absolutely.
All right, then would you tell me, from the understanding that you gained or already had of the Obama health care plan, what are the faults and what are the strengths of Governor Romney's option, or his alternative?
Well, the The fault is very, very easily understood when you simply say that it is a tax on an American people.
No, but I'm sorry, Phil, but General, what do you mean specifically a tax?
I'm saying that you'll be forced to buy insurance.
Well, forced to buy insurance is one thing.
May I finish what I'm saying, Phil?
Go ahead.
Well, he's not responding.
General Shaw is...
I'm going to respond in the way that I want to respond, Ms. Gray, and not in the way that you feel I should, if you don't mind.
Go ahead. This is a big waste of time, though.
I heard that you said it's a big waste of time, and I think that's rude to the point of real aggravating.
I apologize.
Now, I don't understand all the ins and the outs of the Obamacare plan, but I know it is a big government plan, and I'm against them. I don't like them, and I never will like them.
But you don't understand this one.
I don't have to understand this one. My feeling is that the plan is wrong for America. Do you know that a German... The thing that I want to say, Phil, is this. I don't like health care mandated by the government. I never will like health care mandated by the government.
But would you say that you have an understanding of the Obama plan?
And the other thing, I'm going to ignore you until you let me finish. And the other thing that I wanted to say...
Would you say that you understand the Obama health care plan?
Is that the President Obama... I'm ignoring you. The President Obama...
Do you understand the plan?
President Obama...
Well, you interrupting him is not allowing him to collect his thoughts.
Do you understand the plan, General?
President Obama... I'm going to ignore her. President Obama is attempting to bankrupt this country with a health care plan... That doesn't work.
But you don't understand the plan that doesn't work.
And the... Yes, I do.
There, you just responded to me.
I have no choice but to respond to you because you're butting in and butting in.
You've been butting in all night, Margaret.
You... General Shaw, I just made you look like the back end of a horse. All right?
No, you did not. No, you did. I've been trying to explain.
You don't understand the Obama health care plan, and you're ignoring me. That's what you're doing.
No, I've been trying to explain my understanding. I don't need to understand the health care.
All right. You know, General, hold on. You're getting a little flustered.
Well, no, I'm not getting flustered. This woman won't shut that hole that is better used in the bedroom.
Did you hear that? Boy, did I fluster you. In the bedroom, is that what you were going to say?
No, I did not. I said in the bakery. In the bakery.
You did not say in the bakery. You said in the bedroom.
I did not.
General, I thought I heard... Let's grow up here a little bit.
No, wait a minute. I said in the bakery. It better used in the bakery.
All right, so I should shut up and go to a bakery and eat.
Yes, because I've seen some publicity stills of you, and I'm too much of a gentleman.
You're too much of a gentleman.
I'm laughing. I think this is hysterical. I don't think you understand the Obama health care plan any better than Romney does, or any better than the average Republican does. I think Republicans are a lot like you, General. They simply don't like, quote, big government, even when they don't understand what that is, even when they don't understand what a plan is, even when they don't understand that this is actually going to save the American economy trillions of dollars over many years. They don't want to... Vote for it.
Would you shut the hole under your nose, better used, yes, in a bedroom?
I'm laughing my ass free. I'm telling you.
That was unbelievable.
I didn't do anything, Phil. Let the record show I didn't do anything.
What you did was you wouldn't shut up. That's what you did.
I have a right to my opinion.
You've got a right to your opinion if you let people also... have an opinion. But every time somebody got any momentum, whether it's Bobby, whether it's General Shaw, you, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
You never take my side, Phil, and the audience hears this. They hear prejudice.
No, it's not prejudice, Margaret. It's you with the big mouth butting in.
No, it's prejudice against me, the person. I'm not saying as a woman, I'm not saying as anything. As a person, you just don't like to see me win. I'm laughing. I feel victorious. Yay.
All right, we'll be right back. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we continue, hopefully, to talking about the debate tonight between President Obama and Governor Mitt Romney.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
The hole under my nose. I gotta write that.
We're going to a phone call here. We're asking people, basically, the question that we're asking is, if you're undecided, who you're voting for. But I don't want to keep out people that have decided to see if they've changed their minds at all. Okay, let's go to Charlie. Charlie, how are you?
Good evening, Phil. I'm very good.
And who are you voting for?
Well, at this particular point, I think I'm still going to vote for President Obama. And I don't know if you want me to give you...
Yeah, tell me why.
I feel that President Obama has 4 years on the job, has an ability to recognize problems and to recognize, prioritize these problems, and has a head start on what Romney's going to be able to do, you know, because Romney has been out of an executive position, either as a governor or the head of a company, for quite some time. And what he's been doing is professional. He's a professional campaigner is what he is. He's not really, I don't think, giving me much confidence as a leader. I hear him reacting, but I don't hear him acting. I hear him I hear him criticizing President Obama's attempts at solving very serious problems, but I don't hear him originating. And I want to say one more thing. I was very, very, very put off by the comments that Governor Romney made when he was in England, when he said, "I don't see much security here."
Why was that?
The reason is very simple. I thought it was a very knee-jerk and extremely premature, and I thought he was doing it for effect. And I do not like people, politicians, leaders, I don't like them saying things for effect. I don't like them saying things so that they can appear to be strong on national security or defense. And I think that that's exactly what Romney was doing. He was trying to manipulate my view of him as a candidate. He wanted me to see him as a, terrorism, this kind of thing.
So in other words, he said he was gratuitous.
Yeah, that is very good. He was very gratuitous, yeah.
Gratuitous in his criticism of the British. He didn't have any real reason to criticize them. It was just something he said for effect.
That is exactly correct, yes, sir.
All right, now hang on the line there, Charlie. We have Karen is going to join us as well. Karen, how are you?
Phil, I'm great. I called the other night. Is it all right that I called now?
Yeah, it's fine.
I am loving your program. Every night we love it, and I'm here with my husband Herb, and Jerry's here, you know. You've talked to them?
I have, Karen, yes. How did you feel about the debate?
We just got home, and I'll tell you, and I heard, by the way, what is her name, Booby or Bobby? Or
Bobby Dooley.
Yeah, oh, we get a kick out of her. We just get such a kick out of her. Well, I can tell you, Phil, we just love you. I don't care. Are you running for president?
No. Seriously, Karen, so you don't have an opinion?
No, we do have an opinion. Well, let me ask her, do you have an opinion?
About what?
Okay. I just took a sort of a general vote.
See, we're talking about the debate.
No. I know that, dear. I know. Let me get Jerry.
Hey, Bill.
Jerry, how are you?
Hello, very good. If that team went on a Malibu Grand Prix, they got one left open here in Baltimore. Went out, man.
You went on the Malibu Grand Prix. Okay. I have another caller on the line.
Oh, yeah.
And we're talking about the debate.
All right.
Did you see it?
No, sir. I didn't see it, but, well.
Just let me have a look at that. We didn't watch it, Phil. We were out at Malibu Grand Prix. Don't tell anybody. We were out at Malibu Grand Prix.
That was a Malibu Grand Prix. Yeah, your brother-in-law just told me.
And then we went shopping, and then we went,
Mr. Henry, can I interrupt here for just a moment?
We went to Bristol Farm.
Can I interrupt here, Mr. Henry?
Go ahead.
I'm going to let you go.
I want to keep you on the line. I wanted to get some opinion. When you called, Karen, you said that you were opposed to President Obama, that you were in favor of Mitt Romney.
I lied, Phil. I wanted to get on the air. Jerry, come here, honey.
I gotta get going, okay?
No. Jerry, come here.
Yeah. No, Phil, I'm the one. I said I'm opposed. I'm in favor of Mitt Romney. I'll be happy to talk on it if you want to.
All right. Well, this is Charlie. Say hello to Charlie.
Say what?
How are you, sir?
What's your name, Charlie?
Yes, sir. I'm Charlie.
I'm Jerry, sir.
Yes, sir.
I'll talk on it, on Mitt Romney. And I feel that Romney is the man of the moment. I think he's a man that this country needs so very desperately. I think that Mitt Romney is going to turn this country around. Because right now we're going down, 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 down. You know, we're going down, way down. And we've got to turn around. And the only way that I can see to do it is to get this man Obama out of here, because I just don't think he's done a job, you know?
Well, it's my feeling.
All right, we have to take a break, gentlemen.
Well, that's not fair.
Hold on, we'll be right back. We're taking a break. Our number here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. I've got Charlie and I've got Jerry on the phone, both of these guys talking about tonight's debate. One, obviously, a Romney fan, the other an Obama fan. We'll be right back with more here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Let's
see
the model.
The line's open, bud.
Oh, sorry. That's the model.
No. Look at my chair. I bought the cherry at the farm.
Phil
Hendry. Daddy's going to have the cherry.
Get back on the line here, and welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with us, we have Charlie, and we have, I think we had Karen, or Jerry, actually, is with us. Charlie, you there?
This is Jerry. I'm right here.
But we're talking about here, folks, and welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We are here discussing the Obama and Romney debate tonight. We've been discussing it for the last hour or so. We did have Bobby Dooley with us, and we're just taking phone calls from your number, 877-876-PHIL. And we're online at philhendryshow.com as well with our your backstage pass. You can watch the show on Phil TV in HD. And we do thank you very much for we've had a terrific couple of months over the summer of people signing up for backstage passes and being a part of our BSP family, as we like to say. Now, so, Mr. LaFountain, you're there, and where is this gentleman we have?
Jerry.
Jerry, are you there?
Yep, Bill is the Jerry Dobean here.
All right, hold on. Let me get over to Charlie, and let's start all over again. Charlie, when you were talking about you felt that President Obama did a good job tonight, that Romney did not do as well as other people said, correct?
That's correct. Yes, I think I didn't hear Romney say anything that indicates at all to me that he has any better grasp on the reality. I think what Governor Romney has is a grasp on his ideas. But the question is, are his ideas relevant to the problems the country faces? I hear Romney being very dogmatic, and I hear President Obama being very pragmatic, and that is a similar, very dissimilar. That the pragmatist is the man who's going to respond to the problem at hand, and the dogmatic individual is an individual who's going to be inflexible. And I think of the two men, and I think you do need a flexible leader. You do need a leader who is going to be able to improvise. What we used to say in the military is improvise and to take advantage of a situation and tackle that situation.
All right, Jerry?
Yes, sir.
All right, what in your opinion is what?
Well, this man talked about a dogmatic. It reminded me of a joke. The man who said, I'm very dogmatic. He had turned a dog, not turned a dog. He had a robot for a dog, and it's a joke I'd heard. I said, well, you got a dog? He said, yes, sir. He said, well, it's a robot. He said, well, it's dogmatic. I mean, it was an automatic dog. But let me say this about what Jim said.
pragmatic is good, and I want that in a president, too, but I'm not going to have an individual who is blowing this way down the wind. You know, you need someone who's going to say, this good the way it is, this is the way it is, this is the way it is, this is the way it is, this way it is, all down the line, and not be easily swayed. And I'm a man that wants someone who's going to have a very definite opinion on what he's saying. Excuse me for yelling. I'm in a cafeteria right now. I'm in line at cafeteria right now. I'm having dinner with my sister-in-law and everything. Karen's here. Karen?
We're at Perry's Boys still. We're at Perry's Boys.
And, okay, that's fine. We can hear you.
All right. I just want to be sure.
Okay, Charlie, how do you feel about that?
Yes, Charlie LaFountain here, sir.
Yeah, Charlie, how do you feel about that?
Well, I have to be, and I don't mean any offense. I have to be honest. I didn't hear the man say much of anything. I think he said that you want a man who will.
What I said was, you're Charlie, right?
Yes, sir. And you're Jerry.
Yeah, I'm Jerry. Yes, sir. What you said, that you want a man's pragmatic. I think pragmatism is good. Don't get me wrong. I think it's very good, but. I think we need someone to say, okay, now that I've heard all your opinions, I've got this opinion, that opinion, that
thought. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, certainly I don't want someone who wavers with every different opinion. I don't want that. I want someone who can make a decision. But I do want an individual who will make the correct decision, even if it is opposed to the party platform. You see what I mean by the party platform?
I don't know. You know, talk about a party. Is that a little girl or something?
I didn't say potty. I said party. Party. I'm sorry. I have an accent. I come from the Northeast.
Oh, you said party like a party platform. Okay, well, see, if you are a man of your word and you tell the voters that I'm going to lower taxes, I'm going to get the government out of your, you know, let's be honest, you know, if people say take government hand out of my pocket, I want the government out of my pants. I don't want the government in my pants. The government has been in my pants. And that's the thing I think is most offensive to all voters, that because they're going to, at the end of the day, say the government's not just been in my pocket, the government has had its hand shoved right down the front of my pants. And I find that offensive. I find it obviously it's invasive. And I think it also speaks to the, again, I'm going to give a 50-cent word now, the lascivious or the salacious intent of the government, see?
I think that's childish.
Well, no, sir. I think if you look at it honestly, it won't say that.
I think that's childish. I think it's childish to say government wants to put its hand down your pants.
Well, I'm saying government has had its hand in my pants, sir. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think that is a very sharp, a very pointed comment, and I think it's typical of people that are simply anti-government.
No, sir. Not anti-government at all. I'm serving the United States military, sir. I serve in the United States military, sir.
All right, sir. I thank you for your service.
So that if I was anti-government, I wouldn't serve in the U.S. military. I'm a very proud Army veteran. All right, sir. I'm not anti-government. I am anti. You know they call government entitlement. I call it government fondlement. Government fondlement.
All right, gentlemen. We've run out of time. Thank you, Charlie, very much.
I appreciate it, Bill. I enjoyed your program.
And Jerry, thank you.
You want to talk about it? Here's the camera.
Yeah, we got to run, though.
Hold on, Jerry.
Oh, Phil, we're having some dinner at Perry's Boys. Have you been over here?
No, I haven't. Perry's Boys is the...
It's a cafeteria. It's a lot of fun. You've never been... We were going to go to a Fresh Choice. I love Fresh Choice because they have the... What do they have?
They got the pudding. They got a pudding for what they call a pudding pile.
Yes, it's the pudding pile. Do you know that?
I don't know the pudding pile. No, I gotta go though.
Have you been to Fresh Choice?
I've been to Fresh Choice. Yeah.
They've got a big lump, a big huge pile of pudding.
Yeah, I love it. I gotta love it.
Jerry, you know what he wants to be? Wants to go and run and jump in it.
All right, thank you very much. I'm sorry I had to hang up on her.
Look, she's going to call back and be all hurt and everything.
I'm sorry I don't, you know, if she's going to be all hurt and everything, fine.
Well, why do you allow people to go on like that, Phil? I don't understand that.
Why do I allow what?
That woman came on the program almost a full half hour ago, making a complete and utter ass of herself, and you didn't hang up on her.
I didn't hang up on her. She got it. Her brother came on the line, okay? And what, you know, Margaret, just do me a favor. Don't tell me how to do the show.
Well, Phil,
just don't tell me how to do the show, and I'd really very much appreciate that. All right, our number is 877-876-7445. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And remember, a backstage pass to our website gets you all kinds of marvelous goodies. Now, we announced on the show very briefly, actually announced on our pre-show very briefly a while back, that we are planning a one-man show, and we are indeed. As a matter of fact, we're planning on entering into a series of business decisions that will ultimately free me up from doing all this administrative stuff that I do in our business, and it'll also help us produce a one-man show. Really, really excited about it. If you're a member of our Backstage Pass family, you will have first dibs on where, how, when, tickets, etc., and you will get information first and foremost, okay? So that's one of the little perks. And there are so many other things that are going to be happening here over the next 12 months, I'm not even going to go into it.
Like what?
I'm not going to go into it, okay? You know,
just said you're not going to go into it.
Yeah, but you just, like what?
I just said I'm not going into it, man.
You said there's a one-man show.
Yes, but he said there's a one-man show and the rest he's not going to go into.
Okay.
Are you going to ask me now, like what?
Yeah.
I just said I'm not going into it, man. Jeez.
Yeah, but there's, like, I saw one thing on your desk today.
Shut up. You're not going to say anything. Anyway, go to our website, philhenryshow.com. We'll be right back with more out of the news pile today, more on the debate, and other things that are happening right after this. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil
like what?
Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445 and online at philhenryshow.com. President Obama and challenger Mitt Romney differed sharply Wednesday night over taxes, Medicare, and especially the record of the last 4 years in a pointed but largely polite debate that highlighted the deep substantive.
Well, isn't it? But the word is substantial.
No, the word is not substantial. There's the word. Does that look like substantial?
No, that looks like substantive.
That's what I'm saying.
All right.
But you don't mean to say substantial, though. Sorry.
In any way, a polite debate that was highlighted by the deep substantive divide between the two philosophical foes. Romney portrayed Obama's tenure as an unmitigated failure, citing continued high unemployment, a rise in dependence on food stamps and other assistance programs, and disappointingly tepid economic growth. He said the president's trickle-down government was not the right answer for America. He said, quote, I'll restore the vitality that gets America working again. It's very interesting when you hear a statement like that from any politician on either side of the political divide, and the guy says, I'll get it going again, I'll solve the problem. Then they become the president, or they get into office, whatever it may be, and the problem continues, not always, but the problem continues, but they'll tell you, no, it's gotten better. You know, in other words, what's right in front of your nose is not what's happening. Or they'll say, obviously, the platform of the opposing party or just their voting record has stopped me from doing the things that I want to do.
Well, what are you honest? Do you honestly think that they're going to say, you know what, I messed up and my ideas were bad and
it would be refreshing?
Yeah, sure. They're never going to do it.
No, I know what Phil's saying. That would be refreshing.
Well, they're not going to do it, Phil. They're not going to do that because that is political. Honesty is political suicide.
Honest? Oh, get a load of this. Honesty is political suicide.
Honesty is absolute political suicide. Yes.
Would you care to elucidate?
I'd be more than happy to. If you are honest with voters, then you are telling them essentially this. You're saying, number one, gee, I tried something and it didn't work. That's the way life is. That's the way things go. And they will say to you, well, we expected you to do a job that was going to get done. Well, I'm messing up what I wanted to say.
No, I know what you're saying, okay?
But I'm trying to say something, but Bud's sitting there. Would you ask him to take his fingers out of his nose?
I didn't do anything!
Are you picking your nose again?
One time.
It's distracting me.
Bud, don't sit there with your finger up your nose. All right, Margaret, look, if I may.
Go ahead, but you're not going to change my mind.
Well, all right, then I shouldn't talk at all.
No, there's people out there who can have their minds changed.
You mean the people listening?
Well, yes, those are the people that need to have their minds changed. My mind doesn't need to be changed.
All right, well, let me just say to the people out there whose minds can be changed.
Oh, don't roll your eyes, Phil. You know, I've had about enough of that.
Margaret! When you say the following thing, you're right. You're right. Honesty does not necessarily get you a pat on the head. That's what you are trying to say.
Well, what else is there?
Well, wait a minute now. Honesty is always appreciated. It doesn't necessarily get you a pat on the head, but people will file that and say, well, this is an honest person. He saved me some time. I can actually now make decisions that are going to be better for the country based upon the information he's given me. And number one, he just told me, this politician, my ideas didn't work. Okay? Now, you say that that kind of honesty doesn't get rewarded. Well, the honesty that gets rewarded is simply the honesty that allows people to make a more informed decision. But nobody's going to pat a guy on the head for screwing the job up. You're going to get fired. You're going to get fired. Okay?
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So how do you say that honesty rewards people?
No. I didn't say honesty rewards that person who is honest. But honesty will reward the system. Because if I'm a voter, and the guy stands there and says to me, my ideas were faulty. I thought they would work. They didn't. He has just given me some information that I need, which is, okay, this guy's out of ideas. Okay, he no longer has confidence in the plan that he has presented. I can now make a more informed decision as a voter. If that guy's going to smoke and mirror my ass and keep on telling me, well, the opposing party this and the guy that and some other bullcrap, then all he's doing is trying to confuse me. He doesn't want me to have information. He just wants to keep his job.
Well, if you're an informed voter, you'll know whether to fire him or not, won't you?
Yeah. You're right. I would know the guy's smoking mirroring me, but I would be very upset with that individual because, you know, it wouldn't be a clean debate. There would be a lot of confusion. I would much rather have that guy say to me, I suck, my ideas suck, goodbye, I'm gone. All right, now. Is he going to keep his job? No, he isn't. Nobody ever said that honesty means, okay, you were honest, you robbed the bank, well, that's fine. Then you get to stay free, and I won't put you in jail. No one ever said that that kind of honesty, that being that honest, is going to allow you to continue to be just a dirtbag. No. If you're honest, here's what you do. You save the system the time and the effort of going through the long process and the very expensive process of trying your worthless, crooked ass. So you've helped the people that way. Maybe, just maybe the judge will see his way to shortening your sentence or giving you a break. And maybe you played ball with the state's attorney or whatever. In the case of politics, if you're honest, you help declutter the field. You get your ass out of there and get somebody else in there that has a better idea what it is he wants to do. It does help the system. The individual is being honest. That individual, I think, probably somewhere out there in the grand karmic scheme of things, yeah, that probably has helped him, but I can't say for sure.
What do you mean by grand karmic?
He's talking about just like in life.
You mean like you go to heaven?
Well, no, I'm just saying, however it enriches the soul and however it may enrich one's life by being honest, you'll get those rewards. But certainly you don't get to keep your job. Now, that kind of honesty, there hasn't been that kind of honesty in politics maybe ever. We certainly don't have it in American politics. And I don't necessarily know that that's a bad thing. I can understand a guy bullcrapping the voters and saying, no, wait a second, I did a great job, blah, 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 boom. Okay. There's another kind of dishonesty that I hate. I hate this worse. It's the dishonesty of the political ideologue who says that every single solitary step of the way, my philosophy of conservatism or liberalism works. I hate that.
You see, that you just said then essentially that you hate me. Okay?
I don't hate you, Margaret. I don't like that philosophy, though.
Well, I happen to see that boy. You really stepped in it. Now, do you believe in religion?
Do I believe in religion?
Yes, it's a simple question. Do you believe that people have religious beliefs?
Yes, I do.
All right. Do you believe that Christians, for instance, can someone be born a Christian and stay a Christian?
Of course.
Then why can't I be born a liberal and stay a liberal?
Because that's not politics. That's not a religion. That's a political philosophy. What are you telling me, man? That was came from God?
Yeah, right. You think that voting for Obama came from God or something?
No, I didn't say that. But it is similar. All right.
How's it similar? How is it similar to say, well, I'm either a Christian or I'm a liberal or I'm a Christian or I'm a conservative, but it's the same kind of thing. My whole life through, I'm going to be a Christian. And my whole life through, I'm going to be a conservative. What the hell are you talking about?
You know something, Phil? I just don't think politics is something you understand. Politics is, it is religious for a lot of people. And it does mean, my father was a lifelong conservative. I didn't like his philosophy, but I respected that. He voted conservative every step of the way.
Even if it would have been disastrous for the country?
Yes, even if it was disastrous for the country, yes.
Well, isn't that admirable?
Phil, you're talking about my father. So don't, you know, just watch it.
Margaret, I mean, I don't mean any disrespect to the man, but isn't that the height of ignorance? Look at this. Where are you going?
I told you not to disrespect him.
You walked out of the studio for the second time tonight.
That's right, and it might be three times.
Well, you can't disrespect her father.
I didn't disrespect her father. I took issue with his philosophy of voting the party line.
I told you not to talk about my father.
Wow. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
No, don't. Oh, wow.
Are you back?
Yes.
Good, we're going to commercial.
Okay, now I'm leaving.
Why? Because I disrespected you by saying we were going to commercial?
Yes.
Phil Hendry.
Get up and walk out of here one more time. You're fired from the show. It's as simple as that, Margaret. And I'm not, there's no, you can't appeal this to David Hall. You can go off to David Hall. He's not going to.
David Hall will tell you to put me back on the show.
He doesn't tell me to do anything. Do you understand? He doesn't tell me to do anything. I do what I do on the show. I run the game. He doesn't. He is a partner. He consults with me. He goes out and sells the show. He does not tell me what to do on the show. If I want to can your ass, excuse my language.
You know, that's unnecessary, Phil.
Okay, but if I want to can you, I can. I'm sorry I have to talk to you that way, but you get up and walk out of here like that. It's wrong. All right.
Well, can I say something? I thought what you said during the break about Madeleine Albright being Madeleine Partbright was not funny. I've heard that line before.
I didn't know it was pretty funny.
No, you don't thought funny?
I just said no, I didn't think it was funny.
All right, can I tell the audience? See, one of the things is when we talk about something off the air, and you want to just jump right into it, the audience doesn't know what the hell it is we're talking about.
Well, does the audience ever know what you're talking about, Phil? Seriously.
You know what, Margaret? I like to think that they can figure it out. But if we don't even give them a running chance at it... So let me just say to the audience, Dan and I and you and Bud and Robert, we were all discussing the October surprise, correct?
Yes.
All right. No, as far as I know, ladies and gentlemen... There has never been any real October surprise. And what is the October surprise? What was this? What is that? What's that term mean? The first time I ever heard the term was during the Bush years, the most recent Bush, when the opposition to President Bush was so, like, paranoid. I mean, they were really weirded out by a lot of stuff. They thought Bush had some secret he was keeping that come October, just before the November election, he would spring it on the American people, and it would guarantee or ensure that he would be reelected.
Yes, and that. Why do you say that was a fantasy? Madeleine Albright Madeleine Albright, a former Secretary of State, Phil, believed that there was an October surprise. Are you saying she's crazy?
No, I'm not saying she's crazy. I'm saying that Madeleine Albright, as distinguished a woman as she was and is, a former Secretary of State, a former ambassador to the UN, you're right about all those things, was so caught up in the post-9/11 fear and paranoia that, yeah, she bought into this October surprise thing.
The fear and paranoia. So now you're saying a former Secretary of State was paranoid. This woman was in line to be President of the United States. How dare you?
Oh, quit it. Will
you? How dare you?
No, not how dare me. This was what was going on, folks. People thought, and Madeleine Albright believed that this was a possibility, that Bush had already captured bin Laden and had him hidden somewhere. And when October rolled around, bingo, bin Laden would come out, there'd be photographs, see, we captured him, and Bush would be assured of a re-election. Never happened. Then there was the October surprise they thought would happen, which was the following thing. Bush is going over to Saudi Arabia. He's talking to the oil sheiks. And you watch, just ahead of the election, the gas prices will go down. Guess what? They went up. Because I kept track of that.
Well, what year are you talking about?
Well, there was only one election where the Bush, you know, where the Bush as an incumbent would have been, you know, viable, and that was 2004.
What about in 2000?
There was another president.
Yeah, but could have been a surprise anyway.
How's he going to surprise the American people when he's not even president?
Well, I don't. Like, okay, what about, well.
What about 2000? Oh, yeah.
2008? That's what you were going to say.
No, not the two of us.
See, Margaret, every time you get caught, you make fun of how I say stuff.
No, I don't think so, Phil.
I do. So 2008 wouldn't have made sense because he wasn't going to be president. 2000, he wasn't even. It was 2004. And I remember all of the gibbering and the jabbering and the stupidity. Oh, my God. It was record-breaking. Let me tell you why Kerry lost that election.
Kerry lost that election because the neocons went out and bought a bunch of electoral votes. I don't know, but...
Oh, yeah, that's why. Let me tell you why Kerry... One of the reasons why Kerry lost that election, besides the fact that he ran a horrible campaign, it was a terrible campaign. He didn't know what he was talking about from one day to the next. I don't think he ever articulated any particular specific vision for what he wanted to do. It was the most half-assed bunch of ideas I ever heard in my life. But let me tell you the real... One of the real reasons. This guy, bin Laden, and I've often said that dictators, totalitarians, they got no idea, they have no real understanding of American culture, or for that matter, just a free culture. So when bin Laden made that tape, and in it he said that if you vote for George Bush, you're making a big mistake. Do you understand that that was basically like telling the American people, please do vote for George Bush?
I didn't vote for John Kerry. I voted for John Kerry because I felt at that, when I saw bin Laden say that, I felt, all right, then I'll vote for John Kerry and bin Laden will have no excuses. And so if he does attack the country, then we'll know for sure.
We'll know for sure what?
That he's a
douchebag.
Oh, well, you mean that the attack on 9/11 wasn't enough?
No one's saying that, Phil.
Then what are you saying?
Then what are you saying? You see, this is what happens. Your voice gets squeaky.
Well, yeah, but that's what Phil said. You make fun of the way he says stuff when he's got you.
No, he doesn't have her.
Yes, I do, and that's exactly what she did.
Well, Phil, this is what you sounded like. You went, then what are you saying? That's what you did.
Okay, Margaret, let's say I sounded like a girl. Let's say I sounded terrible. Let's say everything you say is true. It still does not address this issue. You voted for John Kerry because bin Laden said to.
No, I did not. I voted for John Kerry because I took bin Laden seriously. That's a different thing, Phil.
That he'd attack America again?
Yes.
That's a...
Go ahead, say it. Go on, say it. I dare you to say it. Gutless?
I won't say it.
I dare you to say it. That's what you were thinking.
Maybe. I won't say it. I'll let the audience decide.
You'll let the audience? Oh, baby.
Boy, that's pretty no guts of you, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, spit it out there, bud. Pretty what? No guts of me? Yeah, okay. All right.
Well, we're not going to just let it sit there. You're not going to let the audience sit there and think that I'm some gutless wonder, are you?
I didn't say you're a gutless wonder. I'll let you, go ahead and articulate to the audience then why you voted for Kerry. I know you said that you voted for him because you felt that, you know, bin Laden was serious about attacking America. I don't think that makes you look any better, but if you'd like to try to, you know, if you'd like to bail yourself out, go ahead.
Bail my, I don't think so, Phil. Ladies and gentlemen, let me just say this. I love this country very much. My grandfather was a member of General Pershing's staff in World War I. My uncle was at Pearl Harbor and went on to fight valiantly in World War II. My family is a very proud American family. I voted for John Kerry in 2004 because I felt he would be the better man for president. And yes, okay, bin Laden said that if Bush were elected, that he would attack the country. So I voted for Kerry because I wasn't going to give the Laden or Bin or whatever they call it, Bin Laden. I know, Phil. I wasn't going to give bin Laden the excuse.
You weren't going to give him the excuse. So in other words, if we voted for Kerry, bin Laden would not be able to attack America.
He would have no excuse, is what I'm saying.
Right. So, and if he did attack America, why, we go to what court to sue him?
Don't be asinine, Phil.
No, you're being asinine. If bin Laden had attacked America after you said you didn't vote for Bush, you voted for Kerry because you didn't want to give bin Laden an excuse. Well, let's just say for grins that bin Laden is a psycho piece of garbage and he doesn't need an excuse. He just kills people for whatever reason.
Yeah, and your point is what?
So let's say he goes ahead and attacks America anyway. Are you going to be mad at him?
Then we know he's a liar.
Then you know he's already a murderer. He's already a murderer, but now you know he's a liar.
You know, this is when I really hate your living guts.
Don't get up and leave. Don't get up and leave. You get up and leave, I'm firing you.
Well, it's not fair.
Go ahead, get Frank on the phone or something.
I am going to get my husband on the phone. Call my husband up, please.
Frank, I can't do it till the break, Mr. Henry told me.
I said to call my husband.
I can't do it till the break, Mr. Henry.
No, don't. You don't touch the phone, Margaret. You don't get to touch the phone.
Oh, you really, whoo! Woo! You are really asking for it.
All right, here is something that I found that I think is very interesting.
What's that, your penis?
Shut up. Very funny.
I didn't get up and leave.
It's a news article. Do we have to break? I think we're going to break.
Oh, yeah, let's break so Phil can get his composure back.
That's pretty funny, man.
No, it wasn't funny. What I'd like to get into when we come back are memorable debate quotes, and these are pretty memorable. These are memorable debate moments and quotes going back to 1960, the first televised debate. These would be presidential televised debates, and I don't really know if there were any presidential debates before the famous Nixon-Kennedy televised debate. That's the first one that was on TV, but is it the first presidential debate? I think, I don't know.
No, I got to look up and find out.
We'll have to look it up and find out. We'll be right back. It's the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. So there have been televised debates, obviously, before tonight's, and many of you have seen them, and many of you have seen fewer of them than others. I don't remember the first one. I was a little kid when the Nixon-Kennedy debate happened, but I think probably we're all familiar with one anecdote or another about it, the most famous being it was the televised aspect of it that got Nixon beat because he, that evening, was not in the best of health. He had been in the hospital. He was a man who tended to perspire, and under the hot lights of the on the set, the lights that they brought on set, there was a great deal of heat and in the room that evening, and therefore he had he was prone to even sweat more, and he was even caught. I don't think he was caught on camera dabbing at his lip, but he was dabbing at the sweat on his face. Now, according to this article in the Los Angeles Times, it's rather interesting looking back on debates. The radio listeners, and this was a time when people were still actively using radio the way that we all use television now. And by that, I mean people would sit down and listen to the radio as well as sit down and watch television. There was a big radio audience for presidential debates. Today, people are going to find a TV. And if they can't find a TV, maybe they'll look for it on the radio, but most of the time they won't. They'll just wait till they get home. The radio audience voted or opined or weighed in to the tune of, I don't know how many millions, but they felt that Nixon had won the debate. They were listening on radio. There were 70 million people who watched it on television. Now, the population of the country was smaller, so that's a hell of a lot of people. The 70 million TV viewers thought Kennedy had won. Now, the conclusion drawn from that might be, well, if it just came down to words, and that is one's ideas, the ability to state those ideas, etc., Nixon won. If it came down to that, but also image, that is the physical appearance, Kennedy won. And I say that because, as I said, Nixon had had a couple of weeks of health problems and didn't look his best. So he lost the debate, and there wasn't another televised presidential debate until 1976. And they say that's one of the reasons, because the image thing, the physical image thing, was just like a hang-up, you know.
Well, if you think about it, the next ones to debate would have been who? Goldwater?
Goldwater and Johnson.
Right, and neither one of those guys is a bargain. Then it would have been Nixon and Humphrey, and neither one of those guys was a bargain. Then it would have been McGovern.
McGovern, he sounded, well, I better not say.
You're going to say he sounded gay?
Yeah, sort of.
Well, I mean, and that was a problem as well.
Well, I mean, McGovern had, George McGovern, let's be, you know, come on. George McGovern might have been extremely liberal, and he was very liberal, and he was very, but, you know, George McGovern was a man. He was a man's man. He was a bomber pilot in World War II. He dropped just as many bombs on Germans and Japanese as anybody. He killed a hell of a lot of people. And as far as I'm concerned, that makes a man presidential material.
Yay!
Thank you.
You're kidding, right?
I'm slightly kidding, but I mean, nobody could argue that George McGovern wasn't, you know, and he was a married guy. He had a way of talking that sounded like this, ain't you saying?
Yes. And the line in Nixon that I thought was uncalled for, when President Nixon refers to George McGovern as a pansy poet socialist, uncalled for.
You know that that wasn't President Nixon, that was Anthony Hopkins.
All right, it was Anthony Hopkins, but it was still President Nixon.
It was Anthony Hopkins uttering a line that I don't even know if Nixon ever said that line. Okay, so...
What do you mean you don't know if Nixon ever said it?
I'm saying it was in a script, so it might not have actually been said.
Well, that took a pair on the part of Oliver Stone then to write it.
I don't disagree with you there. All right, in 1976, President Ford faced off against Jimmy Carter, hoping to catch up to the Democratic challenger's wide lead in the polls. President Ford at that time was, I believe, the only president in the history of the country to have been nominated. Oh, no, he was actually a vice president. He was nominated as vice president, and he was confirmed as the vice president after Spiro Agnew resigned because of legal problems. Well, I mean, this was not a very good time for presidents and vice presidents. You had a president that quit. You had a vice president that was quit ahead of being indicted, who, you know, he. I remember it was Agnew.
Just spit it out, Phil.
Yeah, what are you trying to say?
Nolo contendere. That's what I was going to say. No contest. All right.
What did he do?
That's what Agnew pled to the charges of whatever it was. All right. President Ford faced off against Jimmy Carter, hoping to catch up, but he shot himself in the foot on foreign policy during the 1976 campaign when he said very famously, "There is no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe," a statement that surprised voters and Eastern Europeans alike. And the reason being that obviously there was. They were all communist states, Poland, Bulgaria, you name it, Czechoslovakia, Romania. The reason why I think Ford said what he said wasn't because he was not aware of the fact that the Soviets dominated that part of the world. Of course they did. And the Soviets stood there with their Warsaw Pact powers, their armies, their tanks, and they had invaded Hungary already. They'd invaded Czechoslovakia. I think Ford said that as a way of bucking up attitudes in Eastern Europe, of not talking down to people in Eastern Europe, of at least making it sound like he felt they were independent enough to at least consider themselves to be independent.
Yeah, sure, Phil.
All right, fine. He blew it. I mean, I'm just saying, you don't think for a minute the guy was dumb enough to think there wasn't Soviet control, do you?
That's exactly what I think. God bless Gerald Ford. I know he's no longer with us, but or is he? I think he is. Didn't he just have a stroke?
He's passed on.
You're sure?
Yes, he's passed on. President Ford is gone.
I know he had a stroke, and I just saw him the other day.
No, you didn't see him the other day. The man's been dead for a few years.
Well, I think he was that dumb.
All right, Margaret, no comment.
I see. It's just gotten so bad that you're just going to...
Yeah. Okay. In the next debate... In addition to reusing his "there you go again" line, Reagan deflected accusations that at the age of 73 he was too old for re-election. Though Democratic candidate Walter Mondale outperformed Reagan in the first debate, in the second debate, Reagan put an end to Mondale's upswing in the polls, brushing aside concerns over his old age. Mondale at the time was 56. And Reagan said to Mondale, "I want you to know I will not make... an age issue in this campaign. I'm not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience."
That's pretty funny.
He said that?
Reagan said that, yeah.
I don't get it.
Now, I guess you wouldn't get it.
Oh, what is that? Well, so I'm too dumb?
Basically, what he was saying there is that you know what he was saying. He was making a joke out of Mondale being younger than him. Reagan was 73 at the time. Mondale was 56. Which means that Reagan was 17 when Mondale was born. I can't even conceive of that. So then we move on to the Bush-Dukakis campaign. And I remember this one vividly. It was pretty weird. Bernard Shaw asked Dukakis whether his staunch opposition to the death penalty would be waived were his wife to be raped and killed. Dukakis, calm and without much emotion, said no. And though the former Massachusetts governor has stuck by his answer, his response to the atypical question did nothing to help the campaign. He was very matter-of-fact. You know, I'll tell you, Bernie, here's what I think. He didn't even take into consideration the fact that it was his wife who was the hypothetical person being raped and killed. He just went into this real straight.
Boy, that's really stretching it there. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, if you saw the debate, then you know what I'm talking about. All right, enough of that bull crap. There you have it. That is just a small look at debates past. I don't think there was any kind of a big moment in this one, but there's damn sure going to be one, because if history proves to be, if history proves to be something that does indeed repeat itself, then there's going to be a moment, sure enough, sometime in the forthcoming debates. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be back with our News and Information Hour, which is just like what we've been doing here and in the last hour, and like that when we come back.
Yes, but there'll be more moments about the debate, right?
No.
Well, then I don't really... Never mind.
Phil Hendry. Bill Hendry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I showed that one picture of myself on Phil TV because I think I look a little bit there like Abraham Lincoln, don't you think?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, that's blasphemy.
Oh, take it easy, Mark. I'm just kidding around. Welcome back to our show, and it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we're here every night till 1 o'clock, blah, 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 blah. All right, so.
Well, what does that mean?
I'm just going through the motions here. No, I'm not just going through the motions. It's been a very fatiguing couple of days here. As I mentioned on the pre-show, I have insomnia, which means it's just something I've had since I was a kid, believe it or not, you know?
And you wonder what a child, what did you have to worry about as a child?
I wasn't worried as a kid. What happened when I was a kid is you just wake up in the middle of the night and you're so fascinated with the fact that it's the middle of the night that the most boring thing you could think of doing is sleeping. So I would stay awake, and I would, like, read. I would listen to the radio, obviously. And
what do you mean, obviously?
Because that's, you know, it's kind of like I was learning a skill. I was fascinated by the radio. And I didn't know it at the time, though, that while I was enjoying reading and I was enjoying listening to the radio, or maybe I was just enjoying looking out the window at the night, that I was also sort of developing a bad habit, and that was being used to not sleeping at night. And as a result, as an adult, I have these bouts of insomnia, and a lot of insomnia has to do with just, you know, you're not able to calm your mind. You are thinking, and you finally just say, oh, screw it, I'm just going to get up, you know. And such has been the case for me over the last few days. I had a meeting to go to. I hadn't slept. And yesterday, I finally got a good night's sleep last night. So it's been kind of, you know, one foot in front of the other. Now, this has nothing to do with the insomnia thing, but I thought I would say that since you asked me what the hell was going on with me. And I said, I'm just, you know, screwing around.
So in other words, when you went, blah, 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 you were just being silly.
I was being silly, yeah. All right, now. The new Lincoln trailer premiered during the 2012 presidential debate this evening. I don't know whether you guys saw it or not. We're going to play the audio, and I suppose I could play it on Phil TV, but one of the problems with Phil TV is that when we play something off of the internet, we don't necessarily have the audio synced up. If you were tuning into the 2012 presidential debate on either ABC, CBS, or CNN, you got a special treat, a fresh new trailer from the highly anticipated Steven Spielberg film Lincoln. If you've missed it, we've got you covered. It says here, watch the trailer here. Well, I also have the trailer right here. So, the extended TV spot gave viewers a considerable amount of new footage featuring Sally Field and Tommy Lee Jones, and of course Daniel Day-Lewis, who once again reminds us that he was the perfect choice to play Abraham Lincoln. This is the statement made by the E! Entertainment. And now the subject of Abraham Lincoln. This is kind of ironic, but the subject of Abraham Lincoln, the subject as it is dealt with in the film, because it's based on Doris Goodwin's book *Team of Rivals*, and that it's a very involved book. It's a brilliant book. It's a deep history of Lincoln's, not only his life, and the life of Abraham Lincoln is not covered that much in the book. What's covered is really the pivotal years of his presidency. It's a big subject, it's an involved subject, and it's a historical subject, and E! Entertainment weighing. I'm sorry, E!, you guys, you're great people, but you guys have done more than perhaps any other entity, individual or collective, to make people stupid than any television network.
Well, Phil, that is a hell of a thing for you to say to people that work for a living.
I know they work for a living. I'm not saying that they don't work for a living, but I'm not saying that, oh, well, yeah, they're completely conversant and comfortable with a topic like Abraham Lincoln.
Well, it isn't about Lincoln. It's about a film. It's about a movie. It's about the stars of the film. It's about the director of the film.
Right, I understand that. But when they have comments like, yes, Daniel Day-Lewis, the perfect person to play Abraham Lincoln. I'm a huge Daniel Day-Lewis fan. All right.
Well, you said you thought he was the best actor out there right now.
Yeah, you said you thought he's the best actor on the stage that speaks English, or whatever, how he said it.
But so on the English-speaking stage.
On the English-speaking stage, yes, I did. You're right. I just thought it was ironic, E, giving props and talking about what is
a very important topic here.
Anyway, let's play the audio now to the film Lincoln, and my good friend, Mr. Northcraft, our technical director, he said, I saw it. I said, what'd you think? He said, I don't know what they're trying to say, and I didn't know what Dan was talking about until I actually saw the trailer here a moment ago. There are images of World War I and the space program is, you know, okay. So and all of that is meant to represent moments in American history that are sort of are transcended, or there are moments in American history that don't even come close to what it was that Lincoln represented. So here's the trailer. For every dream,
I think we choose to be born, or we fit it to the times we're born into. We begin with equality. That's the origin, isn't it? That's justice.
See, we've shown that a people can endure awful sacrifice and yet cohere.
Thank you.
Shall we stop this bleeding? Abolishing slavery settles the fate for millions now in bondage and unborn millions to come.
It's either the amendment or this Confederate peace. You cannot have both.
No one's loved as much as you by the people. Don't waste that power.
How many hundreds of thousands have died during your administration?
We must cure ourselves of slavery. This amendment is that cure.
God help us. For trapping you in a marriage that's only ever given you grief.
The fate of human dignity is in our hands. Blood's been spilled to afford us this moment. Now, now, now.
Never trusted the president. Never trusted anyone.
The war will be over in a month.
Tell Lincoln to deny the rumors.
We are guaranteed to lose the whole thing.
Leave the Constitution alone.
You insult God.
You think they'll keep their promise?
I am the president of the United States of America, clothed in immense power.
Rated PG-13. In theaters everywhere, November 16th.
There you go. That's the audio to the trailer of the film Lincoln. And
what? You think that Lincoln talked like that?
Yes, I do. And I think when you hear that, especially on radio, you guys listening to that, you hear what they called and what was described as, when Lincoln was alive, a reedy, southern, twangy voice. Obviously, Daniel Day-Lewis did a lot of research on Lincoln, and especially his voice. How do you make somebody sound from history where there are no recordings, you know? What did George Washington sound like? You know, we only have the written descriptions. If somebody wrote down, well, Washington had a voice like this. And the descriptions of Lincoln's voice are all the same, pretty much. He had this thin, high-sounding voice, a voice that had that southern twang. And I think that, you know, down through the years, theatrically, Lincoln's been represented as a guy who had this, Martha, Mary, or whatever the hell, what was the name of?
Mary Todd Lincoln. My God, Phil.
Well, okay, excuse me. But he had talked like this, you know, or whatever. And no, he didn't. He had a higher sounding voice. You also don't see Daniel Day-Lewis there as Lincoln. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be great. And it shows in the trailer, it shows obviously scenes from the single most pivotal parts of his life, which is when he was president. And he was president during a war, a civil war. The only civil war, thank God, this country has ever endured. And, you know, one that was going to either mean the end of the country or one that was going to ensure that it endured. And, you know, Lincoln's the reason. Lincoln's the reason.
Well, we won then, right?
Yes, we won. What do you think happened?
Are you kidding?
What?
No, we lost. The Confederate, we'd say we, America won as a country because the war ensured the country would last. Is that what you mean?
No, I just wondered who won.
Are you out of your mind, man? The North won, you dumbass.
All right.
God, who won? All right, we'll be right back with more of this scintillating conversation. If you want to know who won the Civil War, stick around. We'll get into depth on that one. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth who is won? Our bitch.
Why, man?
The Phil Hendry Show.
I know that.
Let me get on the line here, Jeff Dowder from Temple City, California this evening. Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Real good, Mr. Harry.
Okay, Bud?
Yeah, well, hey, Jeff. Jeff.
Yeah.
Okay, when Mr. Henry was talking about the Civil War.
Yeah, okay, hold on. This is why I call in, Mr. Henry. Bud wasn't saying, did America win? Bud knows that America won. Okay, Mr. Henry?
Yeah.
What he was asking was, which America won, but was that the North or the South? And I know what you're going to say, but...
You don't know what part of the country?
I know there were slaves, I know that, and I know the part that didn't want slaves didn't want it.
And the part that didn't want slaves won. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know that.
Okay, well, but you don't know if that is the North or the South?
That you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. I know that America won.
It was the part that had slaves was the not the North, it was the South.
And they're the ones that won? No, they didn't win. Are you curious?
Mr. Turner, I've had this conversation with Bud before, and I think once before in your program, and most recently, if I may say, Bud, you remember we were last week at Terry Cahill's house, okay? Remember, she was having a party, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we got in the same discussion last week because he's all, and you know, I mean, all right, I won't say nothing, man, but hitting the crack pipe is probably a...
I didn't hit no crack pipe, man, okay?
You're not hitting that stuff, are you?
No, I'm not.
Well, and what's the story? If you're talking about America winning, okay?
It was the North. It was the North that was the part of the country that was a free part of the country that represented the Union. It was the South.
That what?
The South was the Confederacy. The Southern states were... the part of the country that seceded, that was the part of the country that, for the most part, wanted to keep slavery because it was important to the agribusiness, the agricultural business of that region of the country.
See, that's what you do. You always do that.
Phil, you're too involved. He's getting upset.
You always do it.
What are you crying about?
Just answer yes or no.
The South had slaves they lost.
Yeah, that's what you got to do, Mr. Henry. I'm sorry.
Okay, now I get it.
God, man. Well, what did I do wrong?
Phil, you get very involved with your answer. You go, well, the South and the agribusiness and this. He doesn't understand.
I guess I do, but I wish you'd just say it.
The South lost. They had slaves. The North won. They didn't have slaves. The North and versus the South, okay?
Then how come the South is part of America?
The South's always been part of America, you idiot. What are you talking about?
What do you mean?
If they lost,
the South was treated really bad after they lost. Yeah, you're right, Bud. They had their ass kicked, and there was an occupying army, and they were treated real bad. And they were, and maybe some people think that they should have been, and some people think they should. Lincoln didn't think so. Lincoln, if Lincoln had lived, he wanted to treat the South fairly. He had the famous quote from Lincoln was "malice toward none, charity toward all." He wanted to re-embrace Southerners as our countrymen, which is what they are and always have been. And he didn't want to punish, and he didn't want to have severe Reconstruction methods.
See, there you go again.
Yeah, you're talking, you're using a lot of big words.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I mean, that's why I called up.
Go ahead.
Okay, Bud.
What?
Don't go what, man? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, look. The South lost. Okay? Okay, Bud?
Yeah.
Okay, the South lost. And after they lost, everybody in the North said, yeah, kick their ass because, on account of what Mr. Henry just said, because Lincoln got shot by a dude from down there.
Oh, yeah, that's the guy's Booth, right?
What?
The guy's name of Boo?
John Wilkes Boo? No, John Wilkes Booth.
Okay, Booth.
Not Boo.
Yeah, and John Wilkes Booth, or I don't even know if he was from the South, but anyway, he shot Lincoln.
Well, why, if you got from the South?
Because he thought that Lincoln was a scumbag, man. That's all I've been trying to tell you. Okay? So anyway, after he did it, then the North people went, yeah, okay, that's it, man. You know, that's it. All bets are off. And they went down and started kicking ass on everybody because they thought the Southern people killed Lincoln.
Well, didn't they?
No, they didn't, man. They didn't. It was this guy named Boo, or not Boo, but Booth, okay?
Are you guys that clear on John Wilkes Booth's name?
Somebody told us it was Boo. Not somebody told us, but somebody told Bud.
Who told you that, Bud?
I mean, I thought it was R.C., but I'm not sure.
R.C. Collins. John Wilkes Boo?
He said the guy's name was John Boo or Joe Boo, something like that.
No, it wasn't Joe Boo. It was John Wilkes Boo, Boom, or Boo.
Go ahead.
All right, so anyway, so after he'd done it, then guess what? The North went, okay, all bets are off. Let's go down and just kick ass. So the North goes down to the South, the North went down to the South, the South didn't go to the North.
Well, of course they're not.
Well, I mean, you could say the South went to the North to get their ass kicked, but nobody's going to travel to get their ass kicked. So
yeah, that was the part I was concerned about.
You know something? Hold on for a minute, Jeff.
Okay.
You guys have got to be the biggest knuckleheads in the history of the planet Earth.
Why?
Did the South come to the North to get its ass kicked?
In the war.
Yeah, okay, I know, but we're talking about Lincoln getting assassinated.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, the South stayed there.
The South stayed there. Even if the South decided, oh, you know what, we killed Lincoln, we better go get our ass kicked by the North, how would they travel north to get their ass kicked?
Well, that's what I was saying to Bud.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Was it ever a question?
Bud was saying, after Booth killed Lincoln, he said, you said the South got its ass kicked by the North. I go, yeah. I go, well, did they come up for it? And I go, no, they stayed where they were.
Well, what are you looking at me like that for?
Because, dude, that's sad. Just sad. And you, Jeff.
What?
You're a professor of mechanical physics at Caltech.
Yeah? You notice there's nothing in that title that says history, right? Yeah, hey, man. Surprise.
I don't care, man. I don't care if your specialty isn't history. I'm not even a college professor, and even I know that the South didn't travel to the North to get its ass kicked after it killed Lincoln. And you're right about one thing. The South did not kill Lincoln, bud. It was John Wilkes Booth that killed Lincoln. The South paid the penalty. The South was the object of the wrath. Am I using too many big words?
No.
The South was the object of the wrath of the North after that.
Yeah, so anyway, let me just finish up here, Mr. Aaron, if it's okay.
Go ahead.
So anyway, the North got pissed off because Lincoln got killed, and so they just kicked ass. They kept on kicking ass. And they kicked ass for like 100 years, just, you know, beating down on them and everything. And that's why when you go down south, everybody eats like peanuts and they're all, well, they're not dumb or anything, but a lot of people think they act dumb because they were, at one time they was dumb, eating boiled peanuts and being dumb, you know.
Yeah, because my uncle comes from originally Kentucky, and people say that he was dumb, and a lot of people I talk to down there are dumb.
Yeah, but you know something, bud? You go down south and you talk to the folks down there, they'll probably think you're right at home the way you talk.
Yeah, well, that's true, man. I mean, you know, you're not exactly going to be... Nobody's going to mistake you for Phi Beta Kappa, you know?
Yeah, no one's going to mistake you on a Phi Beta Kappa.
Yeah, except for one thing, man. I teach at a college. Oh, sorry about that, man. I hope that doesn't sting.
No, that's not... doesn't hurt.
Look, what are you two idiots talking about who's smarter? Anyway, bud, the South has had a very long and tough history. They're tough people. They're good people. They've come through it. We're Americans, okay? And as I've often said, some of the most patriotic people in this country are Southerners.
You're saying that the Southerners, they're patriotic for the Confederate?
No, you idiot. They're patriotic for the America.
The America with the red, white, and blue?
Yeah.
Don't you get that, man?
All right.
Okay, so that's great. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Yeah, okay, but I mean, can I also put in a plug for my brother-in-law's slot car track that he opened up in Temple City? It's called Race-O-Rama, and it's going to be open on Tuesday.
I told him I didn't want that, okay?
Yeah, he tried to slip it in.
Yeah, I told him specifically, no, he ain't doing any plugs for his brother-in-law's slot car track.
What's that?
This is a slot car track. This cat's still into slot cars, man. You know those little cars?
Yeah, man, I used to have them. These people still do that?
There's some cats that are still into that stuff, yeah. We'll be back. World famous, so I hope we straighten that out, bud. The North won, and that was the part that didn't have slaves.
Yeah.
Great. Phil Hendry Show.
It's on Las Tunas Boulevard. My foot, track, our track, slowly slip.
Heard this story. It's pretty interesting. It's from Wisconsin. It's completely off of presidential politics, which probably is a good thing here. We're off of the debate stuff. This is a woman who's a television anchor in Wisconsin. I just saw this story. I was going over pictures of the first ladies on TV.
Well, I think the E! Network had the women that had played first ladies in movies. And they had Jean Triplehorn, and they had the very lovely Katie Holmes, and the very lovely Laura Linney. She's just gorgeous.
Yeah.
What do you mean, yeah? You're blowing it off.
That's great. I mean, I'm on to a different story, though.
Well, I just thought you should see this. I know you have an opinion of E, Phil, that is a bit elitist. You think E does not have the right to weigh in on these topics. And on any other day, in any other town, as the poet said, I might agree with you. But I think that E makes...
All right, Margaret, I got to get going, okay, if you're going to give a speech.
Well, are you looking?
Yeah, Laura Linney's fantastic. I don't care. E's great, and I love E. But don't start telling me that E is now the arbiter and the commentator on history. That's all I'm trying to say. That's all I'm trying to say. Now, E's not trying to be a commentator. I just thought it was funny when they were weighing, well, you know, Lincoln, the best man to play Lincoln. Well, how do you guys know?
Well, Phil, I think they're film critics.
They're film critics. Okay. It turns out Daniel Day-Lewis is a great actor. I agree with him. All right, so let me move on to this. There's a woman who is a TV news anchor in Wisconsin. Her name is Jennifer Livingston. And Jennifer Livingston, as a television anchor in Wisconsin, got an email from a viewer who said that she was too fat, and as being a woman too fat was not a suitable role model for young people, young ladies. And she responded to this, and she has been on the Ellen DeGeneres show. She has been on the CBS This Morning show. She's been on a lot of shows as a result, because her response to this email from this viewer that she was too fat and did not make a good role model, her response apparently hit a chord, a positive note, with lots and lots of viewers, to the point where it made national news. Now, down through the years, we've all heard stories about the suitability of television anchors and their looks. Generally, it's something that has to do with females. Oh, she's too this, she's too that. The guys can be so ugly that, you know, they would make a, as the saying goes, make a freight train take a dirt road. Okay, bud, take it easy.
No, I like that one, too.
But in any event, yeah, we got some guys on television that are so ugly, it's frightening, but nobody says anything about that, because guys are allowed to be physically ugly so long as they're very, you know. Women, on the other hand, there's a little bit of a different standard. Now, in a four-minute on-air segment, Livingston responded to somebody who wrote her an email telling her she needed to lose weight. While most of us would be mortified if we received such an email and would hit the delete button without sharing it, Livingston chose a different route. She saw the letter as a symbol of the way people bully each other over their looks, and she used it to send a message to children that their self-worth is not defined by their appearance. In her segment, she noted that October is National Anti-Bullying Month, so she said to all the children out there who feel lost, who are struggling with weight, she mentioned skin color, and I'm not going to nitpick because I know what she's trying to say, but there's a difference between excess weight and skin color, and nobody ever really stops and notices the difference or points it out, because maybe it's too difficult, but there is a difference, and I don't think it's right to say that religion and weight are the same as skin color and gender, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is religion and weight are two things that can be changed. Skin color, gender, even sexual orientation, they cannot be. You are that thing for the rest of your life. And to bully somebody over their skin color, their orientation, or their gender, in my opinion, is really reprehensible and is real scumbag behavior. Bullying someone over their weight and bullying someone over their religion is also pretty scummy behavior and ignorant. But it's also ignorant of the person who's the recipient of this, to say that it's the same as race. I don't think that people who are being attacked for their religion should allow themselves to compare themselves to people who have been attacked because of their race. That's all. You know.
Well, I do see that there is a difference, but are you saying that people who attack those because of their religion are not scumbags or what?
I'm saying that it depends on what their attack is. If you are attacking somebody because they're a Muslim, just because they're a Muslim, because all Muslims are dirtbags in your opinion, then you're a moron, and you don't deserve to be taken seriously. And, you know, in any real serious discussion, you'd lose your ass. If you are attacking Muslims because you think that some of them have been violent, well, you're also scattershotting and being broad brush and not being too intelligent, but at least you're getting closer to the mark. If, however, you attack certain violent sects within the Muslim faith or certain violent sects within the Christian faith and call them out for what they are, hypocritical and et cetera, then I think you're right on the money. And that is not attacking somebody because of their religion. That's attacking somebody because of how perverse their thinking is. You know, so that when some of these so-called Christians say that they're being attacked for their religion when they are homophobic, for instance, when they're people that believe in denying civil rights to certain people, and when you call them out, they say they're being attacked for their religion, those people are hypocrites, and I think the attack should continue.
Yeah, what they're being called, your Christian faith sucks.
Look, if somebody is saying, man, I don't believe that these gay people should have rights, I'm a Christian, and you turn around and attack that person and say, you Christians suck, now you're blowing it, man. Now you just gave that guy the power right back that he lost. You say, oh, you Christians. No, you got to say, you homophobic people that hide behind your religion suck. But I'm not saying Christians suck because there's all kinds of different Christians.
So the people are making a mistake.
Yeah, they're making a big mistake. People that are trying to stand up for the rights of gay people, just as an example, are making a huge mistake, and you're losing the propaganda war, and that's what it is. You're losing the propaganda war when you turn around and say Christians are a bunch of bigots, because those Christians that are bigots will stand there in all of their self-righteousness and say, look, you're attacking my faith. I mean, they almost imagine themselves to be Jesus at that moment, hanging from a cross. I mean, you give them more power when you say to them, you Christians, this, then that. What you need to say is, you bigoted people who claim to be Christians, you're not. But, you know, that's a part of that propaganda battle that has partially been lost, or not lost, but it's been, they've had to regain the ground, I think, because that's what happened. They attacked Christians in general. And so now those cats make this claim about, yeah, you know, just because we're expressing our rights concerning gay people, now we're being persecuted. And this is an anti-religious attack. And it's, our rights to our freedom of religion. I mean, they've really gotten some momentum out of that. And that's because of this not a very educated campaign. And so that's why I point that out, you know.
Well, but you still don't think that fat people should be bullied.
No, of course not. Of course not. Just don't say that being fat is the same as having skin color, because it's not. You're fat, and you may have a predisposition, and you may be young, and I think it's reprehensible to attack children, underage people, for their weight or their looks. I think it's the lowest form of behavior there is. And watch, I'll probably now get emails attacking somebody that I know who's underage because, you know.
Yeah, you get some hate mail now.
Okay, fine. But the point is that if you're an adult and you are overweight and you know better and you're educated, don't start comparing yourself to people who have black skin or are, gay or are women or otherwise are, put into this category. Anyway, this lady is, however, a very courageous lady, and she went on to say that don't allow these kinds of bullies to exist. Now, the guy that wrote the letter, his name is Kenneth Krause, and I got to say to you, Mr. Krause, thank you for signing your name. You know?
Well, what is that supposed to mean? I mean, do you realize what this man said?
No, I know what he said, but do you realize how many of these kinds of letters are sent where they're anonymous? The people don't want to sign their names because anonymity gives you a certain power that you don't have if you sign your name. The letter writer, though, he did sign his name. His name is Kenneth Krause. He's a personal injury attorney, supposedly, and he, quote, appears to spend just as much time working out as perhaps he does writing letters or being a personal injury attorney, and maybe this links his looks. Here he is. There's a picture of him here. Ken Krause is an anti-obesity crusader. At least he has the physique to back it up. Here he is as he's posing in this picture. I don't know, this might be a Facebook picture, and he does look like he works out, and, hell, if I were him, man, I'd sign my name too. Here's a picture on Phil TV.
Oh, God, isn't he lovely?
Wait a minute. Here, there he is.
What about the picture of you put on a homepage?
I don't look that good. Are you kidding? I put that picture on a homepage because people have been asking me, what the hell do you look like? So there it is. And I you know, I did what I did. So in any event, this guy signed his name. He has not backed down from his comments. Krauss told Livingston that he did not believe she was a suitable role model, especially for young girls. His letter had nothing to do with bullying. He's just telling the truth. He was telling the Associated Press this. Efforts to reach Krauss at his office Wednesday were unsuccessful.
Oh, he's hiding.
Maybe. Maybe he's hiding. Maybe he was just out working out or riding his bike. In a sign of just how explosive the use of the word bullying is these days, the controversy over Livingston's response has spun off into a related debate. Was Krauss's letter really bullying the news anchor? No, said one columnist for the Christian Science Monitor. It was rude, it was cruel, but it wasn't bullying. But it is a sign of bully creep. There you go. We'll be back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't be a bully creep.
Don't let bullying creep.
Creep up on you. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about.
I just don't think, but you know me, you know that I keep fit, and you know, Phil, and I don't talk that much about myself, I'm 50-something, but I'm pert, I do, and I don't want any comments. If I see so much as one comment from him...
Bud, I'm not saying nothing.
I am firm, all right? You can ask my husband. But I still don't think you should attack a woman for her weight, and I still don't think that it is... It's not that different. Well, you say it's different from skin color. I don't quite see it that way. There are some things we can't help.
All right, hold on. I'm going to give it to you in perfect perspective because I happen to know a little something about being overweight. I don't know anything about being a woman. I don't know anything about being black. I don't know anything about being Jewish. But I do know something about being fat. And when I say fat, I mean obese. Two summers ago...
Well, Phil, come on now.
Hold on. Hold on. You open the door, man. I'm walking through, okay?
I'm not saying...
Whoa! Two summers ago, I was 300 pounds. 306 pounds, to be exact. And I got all kinds of email from people. I don't share it on the air. I got all kinds of email, all kinds of comments from people, you know, who didn't like me. You fat slob, you fat pig, this, that, okay? Now, are you trying to tell me that I could have realistically come on the air and sat here with a straight face and said, you know, you people out there attacking me for my weight, that's like attacking somebody's skin color.
Well.
Yeah. Now that it's Phil, now that it's Mr. Talk Show Host.
Well, I thought you said that isn't right.
I don't think it's right. I don't think it's right. That has nothing to do with what people who face prejudice because of skin color, gender, sexual orientation, and these things that are from birth, the reality of someone's life, got nothing to do with it. And if you thought I'm going to sit here, and I'm not saying that that's what this young lady, Ms. Livingston, is doing, the TV anchor, she brought that up as an example of, she was trying to talk about bullying. Okay, so I'm not saying she's parading being overweight like, oh, wow, you might as well talk about my skin color. But she did, incorrectly.
I don't think it was incorrect. She's talking about bullying.
All right, she's talking about bullying. She's talking about bullying. If she's talking about bullying, then forget about skin color, forget about weight. Let's just talk about bullying then. What are you talking about? This is why...
You know, Phil, sorry, I have to interrupt. You took a beautiful moment that this young woman was trying to share, a moment of triumph, or as the French say, a moment of triomphe. A moment of triumph. You know that, right?
I know what?
You know that if we are to draw our inspiration from Napoleonic times, the triumph of the moment.
That's okay.
Oh, boy. Boy, you're really asking for that.
What do you mean asking for? Great. Okay, so it was the moment of triumph, and I'm robbing from this woman her moment of triumph. What am I doing?
You're taking a moment of triumph And you're essentially like any dog near any tree. You're lifting your leg to it. Well, you are.
No, I am not. No. No, I'm not. But it really bugs me, and it'll always drive me ape, and it'll drive me nuts to the day that I die. One of the problems we have in this country is we are not specific, we don't define, and so we lump everything together, and the next thing you know, we've got a discussion that isn't a discussion at all. We have no idea what we're talking about. We're talking about three different things when we think we're talking about one thing. We already have more confusion than we will ever have with the internet, and I'll tell you, as much as I love the internet and as much as a source of information as it is the biggest cluster you know what when it comes to trying to figure stuff out. It is not a place to debate things. It's not a place to discuss things. First of all, there's too many stupid people. Second of all, there's too many stupid people that want to be stupid. Third of all, there's too many smart people that want to be stupid. And fourth of all, there's
too many smart people that are stupid.
Too many smart people that are stupid. Yeah, thank you, bud.
Whatever that means.
Well, I think it makes sense. So, why not be clear? Is she talking about bullying? If she's talking about bullying, let's just talk about bullying. You know, they bullied me because of my weight. They bullied this kid over here because of his skin color. Now, I'm not saying that my weight and skin color, I'm talking about being the victim of abuse as the result of the way you are. Now, in her case, the guy said you are not a proper role model for young people. I believe he was very impolite. I think he was probably not even serious. I think he just wanted to take a shot. I don't know. I think this role model for young girls is always the fallback for douchebags like that. However, is it bullying? I don't think so. Now, if she wants to be overweight, that's her business. Is she obese? I don't know. I didn't see her, you know.
Yeah, show a picture of her so you get a good look at it.
What do you mean by it?
Well, I'm talking about the relevant areas. I mean, let's be honest about it, Ms. Gray. I don't mean to be mean or nothing, but they want to know if it's okay to be fat. I want to take good gander at it and see what the goods are.
Yeah, I want to see what it looked like.
What do you mean by it? This will be the last time I ask.
Whoa, hold on. Are you talking about her ass?
Yes.
Her ass.
Woo! Boy, you...
What, am I asking for it?
Yes.
Hold on. Now, it's rude to say that to a woman. We don't have a lot of manners these days. If you look at guys, I'm going to give you an example. Men today are really slob-like. I went out to dinner with a woman, I don't know, 2-3 years ago. All I did was pull a chair out for her. And you would have thought that I was the king of England, man. The woman that seated us, the hostess, the waitress. Oh, my God, look at this man. He pulled the chair out for her. Do you realize? And when I finally said, I said, what's the big deal? They said, men today, younger men, guys in their 20s, are slobs. They don't know anything about opening a door. They don't know anything about pulling out a chair. They're slobs. They were not taught these things by their parents. So as a result, I was the hero of the moment, and I slept with four women that night. Now,
seriously?
No, not seriously. But the fact is, today, guys don't know how to talk to women. Now, this guy who wrote the email about this woman's weight, maybe he's in love with her. Maybe he wants to look at her ass. Maybe he likes fat women. Who knows? But I suspect that this guy is, if he is an anti-obesity crusader, he's talking about her being a bad role model. He just doesn't know how to say it in a way that she's going to hear it. So as a result, she just thinks she's being bullied. And what he's trying to say is, I don't think you're a very good role model being on TV with all of that fat.
Well, I still think he should keep his big fat mouth shut, you know, because I can see the big guns on this guy. He works out, he rides bikes, and he's probably got a cocktail, Frank.
Yeah! Cocktail Frank, man. You ought to have more of a house to serve Cocktail Frank.
Well, maybe I will.
Is that your husband's name?
Why, you dirty...
Wait, hey. You're the one that said Cocktail Frank.
Yeah, what is that, Frank's nickname?
If I weren't a lady, the two of you would be lying there with blood coming from your eyes right now. Good night and have a very pleasant tomorrow.
The two of you would be lying there with blood coming from your eyes.
Yeah, I heard that.
The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft. And how's that for a lockout? And me, Phil Henry. Don't forget to join us online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com for a backstage pass and your entree into the wonderful world of Phil. Until tonight at 10, let that be a lesson to you. Thanks, guys. See you later.
Hey, everybody, and see you later.
Phil Hendry.